Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
And a very good evening to you. Tonight, in the run-up to the general election, we continue our interviews with the Manx government ministers in Tony Brown's government, who will be seeking re-election when the Isle of Man goes to the polls in September. I'm joined live in the studio by someone who's been a member of the House of Keys for nearly a decade now, and in the last 5 years alone has held three ministerial posts, namely Tourism, Home Affairs and Social Care, where he is at present. The turnout in his constituency at the 2006 general election stood at just under 58%, and this evening's guest attracted virtually half of it. A very good evening to Social Care Minister and the Middle MHK, Martin Quayle.
Good evening, James.
You were 42 when you first stood.
Yes,
now you've
yes.
added another 10 years to that, probably a few grey hairs as well.
Quite a few.
10 enjoyable years?
When people ask you if you enjoyed it, I think you enjoy the challenge, because it really is an enormous privilege to represent the people of Middle and to do your best for those people and the people of the island. So I have thoroughly enjoyed it in that way. And really, when you think that at the last general election, I did say I'd almost completed what you could say a 5-year apprenticeship, and I felt if re-elected, I could make an even better and bigger contribution on behalf of the people that would elect me. And this last 5 years has certainly proved that. And I've been the minister of three departments.
Well, I mean, how well do you think the present administration's handled the major, and there has been major challenges over the past 5 years?
I think the historians will look back on this era and probably declare it as one of the most challenging periods in the island's history. There was a coalescence, really, of major issues originating from the United Kingdom, the European Union, the OECD, the IMF, the Foot Review that came our way. There was the Ministry of Justice Constitutional Committee. The VAT sharing arrangements were looked at again and again. And of course, there was the KSF crisis as well, which was successfully overcome.
So how well do you think the government's handled it?
I think it's done very well in terms of not just dealing with that unprecedented amount of issues that all had to be dealt with more or less simultaneously at one point, but also, it's been probably one of the most successful economies in Europe. We avoided recession when much of Europe and around the world was in recession. In the last 5 years, we've achieved 30% growth, obviously in connection with the private sector, but much of the work of government has been able to do economic activity and create the conditions for the private sector, working very closely with them. So 30% growth in 5 years. When you compare that to the UK, which is 0% over 5 years, and I think the European Union is virtually zero as well over 5 years. That's an incredible achievement.
You probably just answered my next question. I was going to ask you, what do you think are the main political and social issues facing the island over the next 5 years? More of the same?
Well, I think while we have had a very challenging period over the last 5 years, I believe the next 5 years will be even more challenging. But I think the resilience and the resourcefulness and the initiative of the Manx people has seen us through problems before, and I really do think if we work together, we can overcome the challenges. We can still carry on going for economic growth, which will assist in the VAT sharing arrangements, which are obviously getting looked at. But also we have an ageing population, which we will need to look after, make sure that the vulnerable people in our society are looked after as well. And that in itself is a challenge, because of the rising age of the population means that we're getting an ever-increasing demand to provide for people as they get older, and also an increased range of services for the disabled, for example.
I mean, you mentioned VAT. There are rumours circulating. It's hard to mention anything without this now. Widely, the rumours circulating that there could be more VAT cuts, up to in the region of £80-100 million. If that is the case, what are your or government's contingency plans?
Well, I'm not speculating on any figure. I don't think it's helpful at all. And I know the Chief Minister and the Treasury Minister has already said that the Treasury Minister is in discussions.
But, I mean, the issue must have been discussed at ministerial level, though.
Yes, but as I said, the Chief Minister has already answered this, as has the Treasury Minister, which both of them have said it is not in our interest to speculate as to what the figure may or may not be.
But as a government minister, do you have an idea in your mind what the figure approximately, or what the percentage of a further reduction could be?
Well, nothing has been decided until we have the final agreement. So I think we just have to realise that it's a very sensitive matter, and I don't think it's wise to speculate.
But there is more. There's more to come. There's a change and a further reduction, or certainly changes to this current agreement on the way.
undoubtedly there will be, I think, a reduction in the income sharing arrangement that we have with the UK. They've made that quite clear. That's on record in the House of Lords. They have said that the Isle of Man needs to have a share of the VAT more in line with how they perceive a new arrangement should be, which is effectively for us to not have any more than what is deemed appropriate under a mechanism which they are discussing.
Would independence be an option once it gets to a certain stage?
I think at this stage we definitely, no, definitely at this stage I would not be advocating full independence. I do think, though, that we need to make sure that if we go for economic growth, then we're less reliant on the income that is coming from the United Kingdom. So I do think we need to diversify the economy in order to successfully plug the gap of the lost income that we have had in the past. And we have got a rebalancing of the budget over the last couple of years going forward. That plan is there. But should there be a further reduction in our income with the VAT from the UK, then I think the more we can do economically to grow our economy, that will help in addressing the shortfall in income.
You can understand the concern. I mean, this question should be to the Chief Minister, but so many people worried and concerned out there. You know, we could be losing anything up to 20% of our annual income. I mean,
I don't think it's helpful to speculate.
Isn't we've helpful, already had it's a big spend, isn't it? Education, health, it's a major cut potentially.
We've had 20%. That's already been a figure that has been dealt with previously. As I said before,
but any more on top of that's going to be very damaging.
Obviously, it's going to make it even more difficult for us to meet the challenges that lie ahead, which is why I think we will need to count on those with experience. And the experience that I have had in the last 5 years dealing with these very issues as a member of the Council of Ministers should, I hope, stand me in good stead if re-elected to carry on doing my best for the people of Middle.
You're Manx born and bred. After school, I think you went into the civil service for a short time. Now you have to deal with civil servants all the time. What about our civil servants? I mean, you're talking cost cutting. If the Isle of Man government was a private company, would we have as many as we've got now?
Well, I think we've been accustomed over the years to have a very good level of public service. And there has been, because of the successful economy, a growing demand for increased provision of services, whether or not they be in health or education or social care. And I think the challenge for the future will be to at least deliver with what is a growing, at least cope with what is a growing demand. And I think that with what we face financially, we will not be able to sustain the government's activities in all that it does. If we want to protect health and education and social care and dealing with the most vulnerable people of our society, recognising that at the moment, for example, I think there's 2.5 working people to every retired person. In a few years, that will be 1 working person to 1 retired person. That's the scale of the problem that we face in having to meet the challenge there. We need to make sure that we have a successful economy so that we can provide a good standard of quality of life for our people who are retiring and indeed throughout our society.
I don't want to pick up one point. There's been a practice developing of senior officers, if you like, retiring, but then being retained as consultants in some cases. Is that financially sound?
Well, I'm not aware of that happening to any large extent. I think there may well be certain aspects or certain instances where it is absolutely crucial to retain the input of that particular officer for a short time, but I am not aware of it happening to any large extent, and nor should it.
In the past, I think, I know you've said there needs to be more careful scrutiny of government spending to ensure value for money, if nothing else. What have you done to check that since you've been, not just in Tynwald, but as a minister?
Right. Well, in the last 5 years, I've been working on it on a daily basis.
So what have we done?
I was in the Department of Home Affairs, and we made savings within that department. We made absolutely sure that the prison that was opened up in Jerby by myself was actually delivered within the budget that was allocated, £41.5 million. And then in transferring to the Department of Tourism and Leisure, I inherited what was proceeding to be £1 million overspend, and that was in August 2008, such that by the end of March 2009, we had got the department's budget under control, and that was at a time really where maybe other departments were not faced with quite such a massive challenge as the one I think I faced with my officers and colleagues on the department at that time. But we got that under budget, and certainly from my time then at Social Care from the 1st of April last year, we have had a massive challenge in trying to deliver that department's expenditure within
and
its budget.
And you said you had to make £1 million in savings, was it, over the financial year? £1 million, something like that?
That was £1 million within the Department of Social Care.
How can you do that? How can you ensure that's done without it being done at the expense of frontline services?
Well, I think people would be the first to appreciate that we have not, I think, to any extent, seen a suffering of the frontline services. We've aimed to protect those while squeezing out savings across the department, and that's been dealt with because now there's central procurement of different items. There's the human resources facilities centralised, the administration. There's been a huge amount of savings that have been able to be achieved, and also when staff have been leaving, then they have not been replaced. So it has been a case of making savings, but trying to deliver the best possible services to people at the front line. They should not be suffering.
You've had three ministerial posts in the past 4.5 years. What does that say about you? Are you versatile, or is this a reflection that perhaps you're not effective?
Well, I think people would point to the fact that having been, I think, a successful Minister of Home Affairs, then being asked to take on the challenge at Tourism and Leisure, and then ending up in charge of the highest spending department in government, the largest department in terms of expenditure, £146 million at the time I took over, but also then the third largest employer. I think that's that would be seen as a promotion rather than a demotion.
If the election was tomorrow, all hypothetical, of course, who would you back for the top job in Manx politics, that of the Chief Minister?
Well, I think we've got to wait for the general election to see who's elected. Certainly the Council of Ministers will come out of the existing members of the House of Keys that are returned. So you have to look, I think, within the existing House of Keys.
Does that give you much faith?
Well, that's why I think we really need as much experience in the new House of Keys as possible, because
within the Keys,
experienced within the House of Keys. Obviously, there'll be other candidates that are offering themselves, but I think when we have had such a massive change politically, we've had a new Lieutenant Governor. There's a new President coming along, as you say, a possibility of a new Chief Minister. There's been a few members of Legislative Council changed in the last. Last 5 years, there's been something like 10 new members of the House of Keys within the last 10 years. And when you think of even the existing Council of Ministers, there were four of us that went in absolutely new as ministers in 2006. So I think there needs to be some continuity, I would suggest, to help meet the challenges that lie ahead.
Are you in favour of a popularly elected Chief Minister?
No, I think it's best to hopefully allow the members, so the population in an area, to assess what's the best candidate. He's there to make the decisions on their behalf. They put their trust in him or her, and I think it's incumbent upon that person then who gets elected to be able to assess who is the best person elected within the House of Keys to form an administration. And it's only when a new Chief Minister is appointed, elected by the House of Keys and the Legislative Council, then that Chief Minister will select his nine ministers to form a Council of Ministers.
Reform of the Legislative Council, something you are keen on. I know that at one point, I think you had a private members bill. What's the way forward, do you believe?
Well, successive House of Keys really have tried to grapple with this over probably a quarter of a century or more. And a bill did go forward in my name. It did get through the House of Keys. It did get to Legislative Council. It did need a little bit of tweaking just to sort out a problem that opponents to the bill had sought to undermine.
Was this with geographical constituencies?
It would have had
New Look Council.
One member of the Legislative Council elected in eight areas around the island.
So this was sort of the eighth super MHKs?
Well, it was, but I think that would have given us a stepping stone certainly a great improvement. Eight members of the Legislative Council would have been elected by the people at this election.
And they would have done effectively the same job they're doing now?
Yes, they would have been appointed. Let's make another point. I represent at the moment 3,750 voters in Middle, whereas many of the single-seat constituencies only have 2,000 votes. There are as many voters in East Douglas and West Douglas, around about 4,000, I think, as I'm representing in Middle. So this situation about voters and super MHKs, it needed to be put to one side. I think we should have had an elected Legislative Council by now. Interesting that Liberal Vannin stood on the platform of wanting elected members of the Legislative Council. They had the chance, and actually, as I remember, Peter Caron didn't actually vote for the bill that went to the Legislative Council, and if he had done, then we might have got what we were seeking to achieve.
You've got a Liberal Vannin candidate amongst the challengers in your candidates contesting the seat in your constituency. You're obviously the sitting member for Middle. Is being the sitting member an advantage or a disadvantage when it comes to the election, do you think?
I think it depends if you're part
of both.
I think it depends if you're part of the government or not. Yes, I know. And I think that has mixed blessings. You have an enormous amount of extra influence by being a member of the Council of Ministers. You sit there after the election and you formulate policies on behalf of your constituents and the people of the island to the best of your ability. So you have far more influence there. But equally, you have the downside of having people carping and criticising from the sidelines, either inside or outside of the House of Keys. I believe I was elected to make a positive contribution on behalf of the people I represent. I've always done that, and hopefully if the voters of Middle hopefully re-elect me, that's what I'll continue to do. We need people in the House of Keys who will make a positive contribution.
I mean, you've been, I think, in the past unsuccessful to bid for a second MHK for the area. Why is it? What is it? I mean, we're talking about boundaries and population here. What is it that perhaps you haven't been able to do because you're on your own?
Well, it's not a case of it without that. In fact, if you look back on the record, the last Boundary Commission would have had, for this general election, had it been approved, they would have had the whole of Union Mills, the whole of Bella Fletcher area in North Douglas, and they would have taken some of North Douglas away to distribute it elsewhere in Douglas. And the Clybane area of my constituency, at the Cool, would have been in South Douglas at this general election. Now, I put an amendment to those proposals saying that there should be two seats for Middle. That was defeated narrowly on an 11 vote to 11 vote. 11 votes for, 11 votes against. The Speaker was obliged to vote against it to maintain the status quo. I lobbied extraordinarily hard to keep Middle intact because I thought it was better for a rural area to be kept in tacked for one seat rather than not being able to get two. And fortunately, the House of Keys defeated the Boundary Commission's recommendation, which is why we still have one seat for Middle at this stage. Oh. In the past, though, there have been seats that have been taken from areas outside of Douglas to be transferred to Douglas to deal with what has been an increasing population. And I felt it was wrong then to seek to readdress what is a deficiency of voters in Douglas by transferring voters from outside an area into Douglas to just so that they can keep their eight seats.
Of course, until I think the mid-80s or so, early 90s, Middle did have more MHKs. The boundaries were the area was different, wasn't
it? Well, that was Uncombe, Braddon and Santon, and they had three seats then.
Yeah. Arch Allaghan, let's talk about that. It wouldn't be Middle without Arch Allaghan. It's been a problem. You've battled as an MHK. Ultimately, successfully, you claimed, I know at the time the inquiry process was flawed, you expressed disappointment when the decision for the site to be used to dispose incinerator waste was approved. Obviously, it didn't happen in the end. You launched an attack on the government, I think, as well, over its landfill tip plans. Will you attack government when you see fit, even though you're a minister?
Well, of course. And in fact, the Arch Allaghan proposals, they came forward in this administration. And luckily, as I had a pre-declared position myself, Minister David Anderson, the ASAP group, Moran commissioners, and Patrick commissioners were fantastic in their efforts to oppose the plans, as indeed were huge amounts of people from around the island, not just in Middle and in Glenfaber. So all credit to everybody involved in helping to defeat those proposals.
So
and the most important thing is that has saved something like a £15 million capital expenditure, and probably something by now, had it been built, something that would have cost millions of pounds over a lifetime in sort of revenue expenditure. So I think that has been one of the biggest achievements certainly the last 5 years.
Well, it was a long-running saga. You said you aren't hesitant to speak up against government when need be. You got rid of Graham Cregeen as a political member of department after he publicly questioned some of its policy. So, that conflicts, doesn't it? It's different now. You're a minister.
Well, I think... I think people would say that I'm as easy to get on with as anybody, and personally, I do get on very well with Mr. Cregeen. However, he was sacked, and however, he did say on the radio this morning it was to do with an appointment to TTFMAG. That was not the point. We had the Chief Minister and I agreed on the 30th of September that Mr. Cregeen would be leaving the department because of his inconsistent compliance with collective responsibility within the department, and in fact it was middle of December or something when the issue arose over the appointment to the TT Motorsport Group, which in fact was an appointment by the Minister of Home Affairs, not within the gift of my department.
Let's talk about that. You moved from Home Affairs to Tourism. I think it was a shock for you at the time. One day you were there, the next you weren't. You arrived hoping the Summerland site, the bus station site, could be redeveloped. You left still hoping. You're not alone there, incidentally.
Well, let's take the Quayside Working Group. I chaired that as Minister for Tourism and Leisure, and we actually worked up and had signed off the heads of terms that have now gone to Tynwald only in the last few days, and the development agreement has been based on the heads of terms that were previously agreed and approved by Tynwald. So now that has been approved by Tynwald, and it is a £70 million private sector scheme, which will be 120-bedroomed, four-star hotel.
We're talking the bus station side.
Apartments, that's right, and retail facilities and a car parking.
And a 999-year lease.
Yes, that was approved by Tynwald as well. So I think that was an achievement in terms of getting that heads of terms agreement dealt with the Quayside Working Group. And I hope now that those plans can come to fruition.
Great scheme, potentially. How do you justify a lease for that length of time?
Well, it was justified at the time to Tynwald. It would take too long to go into that now, but Tynwald saw the benefit of going into that type of lease. It's something not uncommon around the British Isles now, I understand, and that has facilitated what should be a development then on the Quayside site. And I do believe that if that site can now be developed, which has lain empty for far too long, then it can act as a catalyst to development on the South Quay, and of course the neighbouring properties by the Quayside site, which is... where, in fact, I used to work at the Isle of Man Farmers.
Indeed, Bonnemere Richmond Hill, of course. I mean, in terms of the Summerland site, are you hopeful that that will be redeveloped within the next administration? Or are we going to be sitting here 5 years from now, potentially?
I don't know, because obviously I moved to the Department of Social Care. That matter has now been considered by Minister Cretney, and I think Tynwald... And the council of ministers have agreed that the Summerland site is to be transferred to the Department of Infrastructure's estate for them to be able to consider how best to maximise the value on behalf of the people of the island.
We talk about maximising value there. One of your last jobs as tourism minister was to back, I think it was a £750,000 advertising budget. Is it as important now as ever to publicise, even given the climate, what tourism in the Isle of Man has to offer?
Yes, absolutely. We're looking out of the window here tonight and just seeing the glorious countryside, and I can see a bit of my constituency Middle over there. I think the Isle of Man has a lot to offer in terms of tourism, and in the time that I was involved in tourism, I think we were doing an enormous amount of work to promote it. In fact, the television campaign I signed off led to some awards for it, and I think more importantly is the fact that the North One television coverage that I approved in my time as Minister Minister for Tourism and Leisure, although it was controversial at the time to have made a move from the previous incumbent, that is now, I think, virtually universally applauded as being a fantastic success story for the island in the coverage that's on ITV and millions of people that are now being able to watch some superb coverage of the TT races.
Coming to the end of the programme now, if re-elected, Mr. Clare, what are your priorities for the next 5 years?
Well, I think the priorities would have to be to ensure that we can rebalance the budget of the Isle of Man, to continue still further to deal with everything we can to hope to aspire to protect the quality of life of the people that we represent. So I think the economy is certainly on everybody's mind, and that needs to be diversified in order to deal successfully with the drop in revenue from the VAT, and also to deal with increasing demand for the services that we provide, and the also the fact that we would need, I think, to look at making savings and efficiencies further throughout government.
Comes to Election Day. Election Day is now. It's September the 29th. And unlike someone in the Vicar of Dibley who once put a big cross against the name of a councillor to make sure they didn't get in, if you've got a constituents there faced with a number of names on, why should the people of Middle vote for you if they're listening now and they've got to decide?
Right. Well, I've stood now for two elections. So the people of Middle hopefully will have known me by now to be somebody that they can count upon, they can trust. I have the experience of having represented them for 10 years, 5 years virtually finding my way through and still being effective, but realising that when you're a minister, you can make an even bigger impact and work harder on their behalf. So I would hope that they could feel that by re-electing me, I would be able to hit the ground running to make, again, an efficient, effective, enthusiastic contribution to progress in the Isle of Man.
Martin Quayle, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Thank you very much.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.